Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Lakers Explained with me, Christian Rivas, and my co-host, Harrison Fagan. Harrison, how are you doing today, sir?
You know, I'm hanging in there. It's, you know, as you like to say, it's another day in paradise.
it's what I like. It's like the Michael Scott Wayne Gretzky quote.
Yeah, exactly.
With me and Jacob.
Yeah.
We are days away from Lakers basketball returning, and it feels kind of nuts to be talking about basketball again. Like, the fact that you and I have practice reports to do, and we're getting ready to do our basically what we do in the off season with season previews and game previews. It feels like home again. If you're home, we're just a nonstop basketball court with just unexpected news. But yeah, in fewer words, I am excited.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm excited too. I'm like, it just seems like the most 2020 way that this could go is that something goes horribly wrong in the next couple days and they have to cancel the season. Like, yeah. It's just like, I'm almost having a hard time believing that they're actually going to like do this. It's just like, it's been so long since we had basketball. And even with the reality of all of them being in Orlando for the bubble, it still has not fully seemed real yet that they're actually, I keep reminding myself, I'm like, oh yeah, they're going to like actually play televised basketball games on Thursday. Like, I don't think it's going to seem real until they actually like tip ball.
And I think it's a little easier for me to be excited given the success the bubble has had, keeping cases down. And by down, I mean none, at least according to the test they took last week on July 13th. They announced today that of the 346 players they tested for COVID-19 on the campus since the last announcement on July 13th, zero have returned positive tests. That's per Chris Haynes, but I think the NBA has released a statement since. That is crazy, Harrison. Like, the fact
it's
that there
almost
are
like the
zero
bubble system that they spent like months coming up with is kind of like not like kind of safe. Like,
yeah, but I don't think even the most optimistic person could have expected it to be this safe.
To be honest, I kind of did, just because like they had like, not because like, because they caught so many on the lead up to it that like it really, so far it seemed like the system was working. Like, they were catching these tests either before the person got to the bubble or while they were in their quarantine in the bubble. And so like when that kept happening, I was like, I mean, something could obviously go wrong. Like, there could be a false negative or, you know, whatever it may be. But like, it seemed like the bubble was doing what it was designed to do. It was either catching people before they left or it was catching people like as soon as they got to Orlando or whatever, before they really had a chance to spread it around. And again, like, something could always go wrong, but at this point it seems more likely that the reason that this gets shut down is because the situation in Florida gets so bad, more so than anything inside the bubble. But even at that point, like, Disney has so much sway in the local government there that like I have a hard time believing that like it could even get to any level in Florida where the like actual like state government would be saying, no, you are not allowed to do this, even though like you can't be taking tests away or you can't be whatever. Like, but you know, it's Florida, so I don't have a lot of faith that they, you know, they don't really, unfortunately, they don't seem to care enough about their citizens to really do anything about that.
I think the biggest unknown quantity for me, and the reason I was a little pessimistic, other than the fact that I think I'm just habitually pessimistic, is the fact that the Disney employees were the unknown quantity to me. The fact that they weren't being as tested as regularly and weren't staying on the bubble, I think that was the biggest question mark for me. But at least from what we've seen and what we've heard, the contact with between NBA players and Disney employees has been minimal. And the fact that masks are being required as strictly as they are, I think can be something that we can all learn from. And from these early results, the fact that, you know, regular and, you know, readily available testing in combination with masks might actually lead to cases
being down. It's almost like it's not just more testing that leads to more cases. Like, yeah. It seems like, you know, if you actually have a plan, like, things can go somewhat safely. Like, it's interesting how that works, right?
Who could have,
like,
guessed?
Yeah, not, I mean, me. Certainly not me, you know? Like, I don't know. Like, it just, you know, who could have possibly known that all of the scientists saying to do exactly that, like, had some idea of what they were talking about? I don't know. Definitely not me. I always feel like everybody's entitled to their opinions on science.
Well, you know, who is a scientist anymore? Did you know Bill Nye isn't even a real scientist?
See, the world of science, again, it's like the great philosopher Mac from It's Always Sunny, like always said, to paraphrase him, like, science is a liar sometimes. Yep. So, you know.
Not all opinions are facts, yeah. According to Rudy Gobert.
Yes, as noted French philosopher Rudy Gobert once said, like, all facts are opinions, are just opinions, or something like that.
It's been a rough week.
Yeah.
But we do have some basketball to talk about before we get to today's show, which is going to be focused around the season restarting and specifically questions from all of you. So thanks for everybody that sent in questions, but there were a few interesting tidbits from practice that I think we should talk about. The first being Frank Vogel's, I guess, endorsement of Kyle Kuzma and the way he's looked in practices so far, which, as somebody who's covered the team for the last three seasons, I think there's always a lot of hoopla around Kyle Kuzma, and I bought into it for the most part. I think I'm a little jaded given how much Kyle Kuzma was hyped up going into this season and the season he's produced, but I think Frank,
the hype is like Lucy and you're like Charlie Brown with the football, right? And it keeps putting it there and then pulling it away from you. And now you're like, oh, I don't know if I should do this time. And we know you're going to go run and kick at it.
Right.
Like, yeah.
I was just going to say, I regret to inform you, it's back. I'm back. I went for it again. So to read Vogel's quote verbatim, he said he's had a couple of stretches where he's dominated on the floor and it's been really encouraging to see. He had some inconsistency with the beginning of our season because he dealt with three different injuries that really prohibited him from getting his legs under him. The shot making wasn't always there, but it's been there at a very high level during the restart, and we're very encouraged and excited about the what having a real training camp or a healthy training camp could mean for him. Hopefully that leads to an increased role and gives us that boost that we're looking for, end quote. I think the point about the injuries is fair to make. Because anytime it looked like Kyle Kuzma was on the brink of figuring something out, it seems like he's had to start from square one. And obviously the first time that happened was literally before the season restarted, so he wasn't able to have a training camp, a preseason, and was kind of just playing catch up all season. And like I said, when he finally, it looked like he was starting to catch up again, he had a restart. So I don't know what to expect from Kuzma when he comes back. I think a lot of the stuff that he needs to work on, specifically his shooting, comes down to his mechanics more than his legs, but I do think his legs play a part in it. What are your thoughts on Vogel's comments, Harrison?
I think you really just added some important, a lot of important context there, and I think those are all fair points that, like, someone who is a Kuz optimist could make. And look, like, I think Kuzma, you know, it's similar to what happened to KCP at the beginning of the year, right? Where, like, when you're not the shiny new toy anymore, like, it's easier for people to turn on you, you know? Like, where, like, and you're going to see that hate come out. Like, I think Kuzma got hated on a little bit more than he probably deserved this season, but, you know, that's, like, how, like, fandom reactions, and that's how, like, we all react to sports. Like, that's why we all love it so much. Like, it lets us be irrational and just, like, you know, like, fire off analysis and whatever, however we want. But, like, I think as far as Kuzma goes, like, yeah, I mean, there's a chance that all of that stuff is true. Excuse me. The thing that makes me a little bit wary is that, you know, I think, like, it makes me a little bit worried that like Vogel feels like so desperate to plug this.
Yeah.
You know, like the fact that they're really trying to sell it. Like, it's not just, you know, obviously in a scrum, like he was asked about Kuzma and how he's looked. But he's gone out of his way a couple other times when that people have asked about who's impressing to talk about Kuzma. Today, evidently, when reporters walked in for the first time, it's the first time they've been allowed to watch practice because they only just cleared quarantine in the bubble. But they walked in and, you know, they all got their like cameras out and were, but, you know, like it was clear that they were in there. And like, I don't know the exact context for this, but, you know, Kyle Goon of the OC Register tweeted that Vogel said, and this was before their media availability, that Kuzma was 9 of 10 in their scrimmage yesterday. I have no idea what possible context would lead him to just, like, scream that out as they were scrimmaging or something like that, beyond, like, as soon as the media walked in, beyond, like, really wanting us to know that Kuzma is playing well and maybe, you know, trying to get Kuzma feeling good about himself a little bit, too. You know, like, people, if people give you compliments, it gives you more confidence. And so, like, I think that's good coaching on Vogel's part. It's just, I'm still a little bit skeptical just based on how the fit has not always looked the best at times. Although I thought that you made a good point when you were writing today about how the absence of Rondo may actually aid him in some ways.
Yeah, I think that is more it than anything, because it was pretty early on into the season that AD went down and Kyle Kuzma filled in that role. And, you know, Kuzma wasn't even 100% at that time. And he looked great in that role. Like, I don't have the starters numbers pulled up right in front of me right now, but I know he was averaging 20 points per game, which is around what he averaged in the two previous season when he was a starter. And I think a lot of that has to do with him just feeling comfortable with the ball in his hands and creating offense for himself, which, as we've talked about all season, is the type of player the Lakers have needed in that second unit. They have a few players that can do that now in Deion Waiters and J.R. Smith, but the fact that they're not going to have a ball dominant point guard in Rajon Rondo in that second unit, Alex Caruso kind of alluded to it last week, but the fact that him and Kuzma could be sharing ball handling duties with that second unit, I think is a real bright spot, and is something that, you know, I'm at least looking forward to when the season restarts. And if you can't tell, Harrison, I bought into it. I'm back. We're back.
No, I'm excited for like what tattoo bet you're going to make about Kuz now. Like when, you know, we finally like bully you enough in Slack that you're like, all right, well, I'll show you guys like the Caruso thing. So,
oh, if there's anybody that gets me there, it's going to be Anthony.
Yeah. We need to like figure out a way to have the two of you host a podcast before the season gets going, so that you can like, you know, be on record saying that you're going to do some other like regrettable prediction if something happens.
Well, they say tattoos are addicting. And if I get one on my arm, it's just going to look empty.
For you, it might just be like tattoo bets are addicting. Like, you might be becoming slowly addicted to just like threatening that you're going to get a tattoo based on certain outcomes.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. I don't anticipate I will get either just because needles scare me, but
I think Caruso only has to score like 15 points in a win, and you got to get a tattoo. That, like, you know, you lowered the standard, like, you know, quite a bit on that.
I did not lower the standard. Somebody said 15 points, which, yes, given his per game averages, would be exceeding expectations for him. It would have to, like, it would genuinely have to be a 15 point triple double for me to even consider.
Honestly don't think that we can rule that out. Like, it's probably not super likely, but with their lack of ball handling, like,
yeah,
he might get it. Like, if he just has a really good game, or like, you know, some of the bench guys are like, if Kuz is really on shooting one night, like, you know, it's possible.
Okay, moving on. LeBron James talked a bit about his MVP candidacy today, and Harrison, I think we're on the same page when we say that I don't think LeBron James is in the MVP conversation just because of his age. Like, the things he's doing this season is impressive for any player, any age, any season.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, I thought for a second, the way you phrased it, I thought you meant the opposite. Like, he's because he is 35, he's not allowed to be in it. And I was like, that is ageist, and I don't appreciate what you're doing there just because I'm getting closer to 35, like, as each day ticks by. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you 100%. His like season is like historic, and it's been, like, he's been incredible.
And As far as voters are concerned, his season is over. The 25.7 points, 10.6 assists, 7.9 rebounds, and 1.2 steals per game that he's averaged in the regular season, or at least before the season was suspended, is what voters are going to be going off of when they vote for MVP.
No, so this is the weird thing. Evidently, your statistics can still be added to. It's just that they're only supposed to base their MVP vote on what happened beforehand.
That's why I said
that's for contractual reasons, though.
Yeah. As far as voters are concerned, though, their season is over.
It's over.
Like, his stats can still change. And I noted that in the story I wrote earlier. If you want to check it out, I think it's pretty good. It is interesting because I think the point that a lot of people were making and the reason it's even a conversation is because right before the season was suspended, LeBron looked like he was playing his best basketball of the season. Like, he was obviously, if there were more games played, if the rest of the season was played out, I think
there was LeBron, like a quarter of it left too. Like, it was a decent amount.
I think LeBron would have made a stronger case for MVP than already exists right now. And to be clear, I think that case is pretty strong. And he talked about it today at practice. So he said, quote, "I'm not disappointed because things happen. Control what you can control, and I can't control that. As far as the MVP race, I think I've shown what I'm capable of doing, not only individually, but from a team perspective, us being number one in the West." There was a lot of conversations about LeBron can't do things in the East, but if he ever came to the West, what could he do? I heard all of that to be able to have our team at the top of the Western Conference and playing the way we were playing at the time and the way I was playing. That's definitely a good feeling. And the note about him making a note of people saying that he can only do things in the East is the part that made me and apparently him laugh too.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, like, honestly, I think that take, like, if we're ranking, like, things that LeBron has said, and that's when it became personal to me, like, that is a far more likely one than someone actually calling him washed, even though we know Anthony did. I mean, I think that there's some level of dispute of whether or not that's actually the reason he started calling himself Washed King. Yeah. I choose to believe that in my headcanon, but, you know, I understand not everyone else will feel the same way. But I think that, I feel like I've definitely heard Skip Bayless say that LeBron would not be doing this stuff in the West. So, like, I think that's, like, a real one that people have actually had that take or something close to it.
Yeah, I saw somebody tweet earlier this month that the fact that LeBron James has never acknowledged Skip Bayless deserves to go on his Hall of Fame resume. I don't think he has. I don't think he's addressed him at all.
Not directly to my knowledge, I don't think. Like, not that I remember. You know, again, I've only been covering him, like, around 2 years now. So, like, it's possible that there was some moment that I forget. But I feel like I would have known about that.
I think Giannis is still going to win MVP because I think the, like, barometer for repeat MVPs is, did this player get better from the year before? And the answer is an astounding yes.
Yes.
He's the best player on the best team in the NBA. The numbers he's putting up, I think only Wilt and Shaq have put up. So anytime you're in that category, I think you deserve.
I think somebody said Heat LeBron too, which is also like a pretty high bar as well.
It is insane what he's doing, and I think he'd absolutely deserve it. But if LeBron won it, I wouldn't be mad either.
You know, the thing that was interesting to me was, I saw Dan Wojcicki of the LA Times today tweet that, like, Giannis's, like, statistical case, essentially the gist of what he said was that Giannis's statistical case is, like, insurmountable, but that, like, some voters may be swayed by the narrative of, like, how tough the Lakers season was, how LeBron kept them going, and, like, you know, I thought that was interesting that someone who I believe does have a vote was espousing this is what some voters might be thinking. And, you know, we all know how swayed by narrative the, like, NBA media voting apparatus can be at times.
Media
Dell. The media Dell. Shouts to Derrick Rose's 2011 MVP campaign. So, like, I'm just saying, like, people can win it And, you know, that James Harden would say all of Steph Curry's MVPs that he won over him would also point out that those were all narrative, too. I disagree with that one a little bit less so than the Rose MVP. I thought it should have been Dwight that year. But LeBron also had a case. But anyway.
Nash's second MVP.
Yeah, Nash's second MVP is actually, like, a particularly relevant one for Lakers fans, since that was a year that Kobe, you know, I think most of us would maintain should have won. Yeah. So, like, we've seen this happen before, and like we even saw Shaq like not get unanimous MVP just because someone felt like Allen Iverson had like a fun season, yeah, you know, with Philly, and like he had less help or what, you know, whatever, I don't know. So like we've seen people get swayed by narrative before. If Giannis wins, I have some doubt that it will be unanimous. I think there will be some people like that will end up voting for LeBron because they believe, yeah, you know, they talk themselves into the intangible storyline more. And I do think that there's some like merit to that. I think it ultimately, if I had to vote, I would feel like a little bit of a homer if I voted for LeBron, just because obviously I've watched him closer this year. But when you look at what Giannis has done and like where that team would be without him, like I think it's hard to make the case. I think it's a little bit harder to make the case for LeBron, especially like when you look at the side-by-side stats and all of that stuff, like Giannis having, I think, at least a less good second best player, if not like there's some debate over who has less help overall. But like, yeah, I think it's probably Giannis. I think you're with me on that. But, yeah, like, I do think that there's a case to be made for LeBron. And, like, I would not be shocked to see some members of the media make it. I would be shocked to see him overall, like, win it. But I don't think it's going to be unanimous.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be unanimous either. And like, in all fairness to LeBron, he'll have the opportunity, at least, you know, we're hoping to prove that he's still the most valuable player in a playoff series, which I think is all those Clippers and Bucks games proved, which is ultimately what led to this conversation being relevant again, is those two games.
Yeah, again, and I'm like, I think that for any one game, like I would still take LeBron. I just don't think that that's what the MVP race is. I think it's like the merits of like what you've done the whole season. And like, I think for Giannis, like, you know, I just think he's been better a little bit, like on, you know, it's not by a lot, but I just think it's a little bit. And, you know, maybe if LeBron had that last quarter of the season, he could have made up the distance. I think it's unfortunate that we're not going to get to watch him try, but I am just glad that we're getting basketball back. And we can yell about voting again. Like, this is, you know, this is exciting. It's another return of basketball. We can all have stupid arguments online.
Oh, man. That reminds me. Anthony's going to be locked back on again.
Yeah, he's going to be locked on more for sure.
When we get back from the break, we're going to answer some of your questions. So you have that to look forward to.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
So we asked you guys to ask us some questions, and in return, we will answer them. I think I said if we didn't get questions, this would have been just us sitting in silence for half an hour.
We would have done that, absolutely. Yeah, like, Kristen and I are in agreement just to punish you as, like, the listenership for not sending us any questions. We would have just sat here.
And I even thought about putting a secret message at like 28 minutes, but it's not even worth that if we don't get questions. So
yeah,
thankfully we avoided that. And so with that being said, we will get to these questions. I butcher at names every time I do this.
I'm going to be honest with you. You did not sound that enthusiastic when you threw to the questions at the break. Like, I'm going to need you to amp it up like a little bit and just like, well, like we got to thank people. Like, hey, the listeners came through for us as the real MVP. Like, the least you could do. Like, I'm excited for all of your questions. I'm sorry that Christian is not, but we all know that's why I'm the people's favorite co-host.
The first question we have, should I do ats?
I don't know. I mean, go for it. I had to try last time, and like I had to read a lot more when we were doing the Laker fan one.
I did not know we were one-upping each other on our ability to read.
No, it's okay. I mean, you know, if you can't read, that's okay. You can admit that. This is a safe space.
Our first question comes from our friend Zane. And he asks, will KCP pass the torch to LeBron?
I'm going to say yes. Wait, no, I feel like this is a trick question because that implies, I think I just admitted that KCP has the torch. Is that what he wanted?
I think so.
Yeah, I think Zane just like just entrapped me. You know, honestly, respect to Zane.
That you was, got that got. Nice.
Yeah, he got me.
If we're talking in terms of 3-point shooting, I sure hope so because KCP's been a great 3-point shooter this year.
Yeah, well, let's get that storyline going. KCP taught LeBron how to shoot over the break.
Our next question comes from our friend Bill at Bill DeFilippo. I'm sorry if I.
I believe it's Bill DeFilippo, but you worked with him, so.
DeFilippo. He asks, which of the potential 8 seeds gives you the most concern, and how is your answer impacted by whether or not Zion is back and able to play in a first-round series? We have a few questions like this, so I want to say that, yes, I think the Pelicans are the team that worries me the most, not because I think they're going to beat the Lakers, but I think they will definitely be the team to wear them out the most just because of how young they are. I think Brandon Ingram is a problem, to borrow a phrase from Twitter.
He's a bucket.
He is a bucket on offense. And I think he's just going to give the Lakers a lot of problems. Obviously, Lonzo loves running the break. And if you add Zion Williamson to that break, I think it is just a handful for the Lakers. Again, still taking the Lakers in a 7-game series, and I think that series ultimately wraps up in 5 games. But, yeah, outside of them, maybe the Trailblazers, but, I mean, they don't have anybody on the team other than Skinny Melo that can guard LeBron, so.
Yeah, I think I'm actually with you on, again, provided Zion comes back to the bubble and he's in good health and, like, he's, like, you know, I know that he was, they said that he was dealing with a family matter, but, like, he has to be tested and he's going out into the world during that time, so who knows what's going to happen. He's going to have to come back, go through quarantine again, like, all of that, miss a good chunk of this training camp part with his team. So, like, you know, those are big caveats, but he also missed basically the whole season and then came back and played like an all-star for, you know, the time that he did play. So, Zion's pretty good, and we've seen that he doesn't necessarily need a lot of warm-up to get there. So, like, you know, I think that I'm in agreement with you also because of, you know, you briefly mentioned that they're young. Like, I do think that there is a little bit something to the idea that young teams will have something of an advantage here just because, like, even though there's less travel, like, there's also less time in between games. And so, like, they may be able to recover a little bit more quickly. And a team that plays fast like them, like, there is a chance that they can give the Lakers some issues. But again, I'm with you. I don't think it goes longer than 5 games. Like, I actually – somebody made this point on – it was either in my mentions or the Silver Screen and Roll mentions today, and I apologize for not having their app, like, handy. But, like, the Blazers honestly – like may be worse than than people are like giving them credit for. I know Chuck said that like he would pick them to beat the Lakers. Danny Green said the Lakers consider the Blazers to be the biggest threat. But like I think without Ariza and with nobody to guard LeBron other than Melo, who just dropped weight, and like I feel like that's really not going to help him with the whole like guarding LeBron thing, and the Blazers just kind of getting bigger and not really having a guy that can give Anthony Davis problems, like I don't know, I really just don't see them as very much of a threat outside of, you know, one game in that series you'd get a Dame explosion, but like I think the Lakers match up much better with them overall than they do with and they also don't have like the ball pressure defenders to take advantage of the Lakers like point guard issues, whereas the Pelicans, they have Jrue Holiday, they have like Josh Hart isn't the best guard defender, but like they have bodies that they can throw at the guards more so than the Blazers do, where that's really a weakness for them is defense in the backcourt. I think, you know, but wherever you stand, I think we can all be in agreement that, you know, like with apologies to Memphis, the biggest threat is not the Grizzlies. Like I think the Lakers are going to be doing like you know, like jumps for joy if things kind of stand chalk and the Grizzlies end up being their opponent in the first round. I think the only opponent that you could want for them more than that at this point are the Kings somehow hilariously falling their way into the playoffs, or like the Suns, who are, yes, like the Suns are actually in the bubble. Like I had to Google and double check that the other day, but yes, they are out there. So, you know.
And the Spurs.
Oh God, the Spurs are out there.
Yeah.
Has anyone Noble even Marcus, talked to that? Has there been any media from the Spurs out there at all?
I think somebody posted a video of DeRozan dunking or something.
Okay, yeah, because I genuinely forgot they were out there.
Yeah. That is the best case scenario because not only is LaMarcus out, but they just announced Trey Lyles isn't going to be in the bubble anymore. So,
yeah. I was really worried about him in a potential playoff match. Yeah. So, yeah, that's you know, big sigh of relief for the Lakers there.
Yeah, I think to your point about the Blazers, it really just boils down to like whatever advantage Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum have in the backcourt with their talent. LeBron James and Anthony cancel that out, plus then some, just because they're more talented at their respective positions than Dame and CJ McCollum are. So
yeah, I think to sum this up, I think we're in agreement that it's Pelicans if Zion is back and everything is good. It's Blazers if not.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know. The Kings were playing really well before the break.
Christian, like their whole roster is either has coronavirus or accidentally or keeps injured. Walking out of the bubble or is injured. Like, yeah. I don't
but
know. I
assume, just, assuming full health. Like yeah, we're
well,
doing
assuming
with the
that
Pelicans.
They understand where the NBA is allowing them to walk or not. Like, you know.
The second question we have comes from Frustrated Kobe. At Joseph Tatul, what are the deciding factors, so to speak, that will enable the Lakers to win it all this year? I imagine Kuz production is one of them. Yes, I think I can confirm if Kuzma plays well, the Lakers will have a better chance of making it pretty far. Defense is the other big one because, as I've mentioned before, I think KCP has had a down defensive year overall, and who knows what Alex Caruso is going to do with more playing time and if Deion Waiters or J.R. Smith can offer anything on that end. So, yeah.
I think we're Kuzma, both optimistic they can. We just don't know. Like, it's been so long. Yeah.
So, Kuzma and defense are my two biggest ones.
Yeah, I think, you know, you mentioned Deion and J.R. Like, I think figuring out some kind of solution for – like this, you know, Rondo, Bradley, like filling those minutes with capable play and figuring out other lineups that work. I think for me, that's the biggest thing, honestly, right now, is like just figuring out what combinations are you going to go to now to like play in place of those guys, because those guys were part of a lot of the Lakers' most used lineups. And so like they're going to have to figure out something in that respect, as well as like how do they run things, like what adjustments do they make in terms of how they get into their offense, how they play defense without those guys. And like to me though, that's like I think the biggest question facing this team, you know.
Yeah.
I think what's gonna be hilarious is like I think what we might see is if Kuz starts playing too well without Rondo and like the Lakers actually start to look better, like I think we may see LeBron stealth tank a little bit just so that like Frank can't point to like be like, look how much better we were while he was out. Like, we can't play him when he comes back. And but I think we may see LeBron, like, accidentally, like, throw a couple passes off Kuz's hands or something like that. Like,
and if there's any player skilled enough to do that, it is LeBron James.
Oh, like, absolutely. LeBron could get it, like, to where it's, like, he knows, like, you know, calculated in his brain, it's, like, just 2 inches beyond Kuzma's, like, catch radius.
It's almost like... like faking somebody's murder. It's like LeBron is gonna sabotage somebody's season. No, I mean, jokes aside, I do agree that that second unit is where it gets really interesting for me, especially because Markieff Morris, as far as we know, is not in the bubble yet.
He is not in the bubble yet. Who knows when and if he's going to get there. He was on the Lakers finalized roster that got released today by the NBA. So like they are holding out hope that he will be there.
Beyond that, I think the ones we can lock in are Caruso, Kuzma, and Dwight. Beyond that, I think those two spots are wide open. I think Deion Waiters will probably get an extended look because of his ball handling ability. But I think if you look at videos from their scrimmages, Quinn Cook has also taken a bigger role in those at least scrimmage units. And with the experience he has in the postseason and the amount of time he's had on the team compared to JR and Deion, if only for political reasons, I think he may get more playing time in the backcourt than Deion and JR initially. But like I said, we don't know at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we do need to do is we all need to make a promise that we're not going to overreact to, like Cook playing a lot of minutes in, like, the scrimmage games or maybe even the first couple seeding games. Like, I do really think that because of the factors that you mentioned, he's going to be given an opportunity to earn, like, these minutes just because he's been here. Like, he's been committed the whole year. He's, like, everybody's favorite teammate. Like, I think they're going to give him a real chance to go. And, like, you know, he does have some skills that fit pretty well with LeBron and AD, like, at least in closing lineups and stuff like that, where you just want shooters around those guys. Like, I think there's an argument to me. I know Jazz and Anthony were, you know, trashing him on yesterday's show, but, like, I think there's an argument to be made for Cook's skill set in certain lineups.
Yeah, I don't know if I can go there.
I don't know. I the one that was calling him, like, a supreme playmaker on, like, our last couple podcasts, so.
No, the exact – I forgot he was on the team two podcasts ago. So.
Well, yeah, but then you called him a playmaker, so.
He's a ball handler, if nothing else. He just – he can't make an entry pass. Our friend Kian asks, what do you expect from the young guys, Talen Horton-Tucker, Kaycock, Giannis's brother? And to be clear –
I love that he's just known as Giannis's brother.
To be clear, it's comma and Giannis's brother, not – THD Kaycock, Giannis's brother. Giannis does not have a brother.
Unless there's something about about Kaycock that we're not aware of. Like, maybe he actually is Giannis's brother, you know? Like he does have, like, a really, like, pretty solid NBA physique. You know, I would not be shocked to find out.
And his stat line reflects an Antetokounmpo more than Kostas's has in the G League. Ooh, burn.
I mean, that was it's hard to argue. But yeah, so, like, I don't know what Thanasis can really bring to the Lakers, like, just in terms of, you know, because he's not on the team. But no, I'm assuming they're probably talking about Kostas. Although that would be funny if they wanted an in-depth Thanasis preview on Silver Screen and Roll. But, you know, I'd do it. Yeah, I mean, I honestly am not even aware of what position he plays. So, like, I'm not sure that I can help there. I'm pretty sure it's point guard. But, I cannot help with your Thanasis scouting report. I barely knew who Kostas was before he joined the Lakers. I just knew they were both in the league.
Whatever helps the cause, if we're being honest.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, you know, honestly, I don't expect much from any of them. Like, I think, to me, Devonte is probably the one that is the most primed to be able to make an impact just because the Lakers have the least depth at the big man position. I think he's more ready to play and, like, more plug and play than Kostas is. And, like, you know, we've at least seen, like, that he can rebound and that he can, like, you know, he's a somewhat switchable defender. So, like, those are skills where if they need someone like that, where he could be plugged in. Like, but again, I don't expect any of these guys to play a super significant role because I think that it would require more injuries before the Lakers got to the point in the bench where any of them are playing significantly. Like, you know, we talk about the Lakers guard issues and, you know, maybe Talen comes in and just kills it in Orlando in the seeding games when he is given his opportunity and he forces his way into that conversation of, like, where do the Lakers get the rest of their ball handling from? But until he does that, it's hard for me to see him playing over any of the guards that they have right now, at least when it matters. And Kostas is still so raw that, like, I just can't see them going to him outside of desperation or, like, in the seeding games when they're just, like, giving people minutes just to kind of get them ready.
You put a lot more thought into that answer than I am going to, because my short answer is nothing and my long answer is nothing much. I think, to your point about Kaycock, I think he can help, but similar to the way that, like, guys like Thomas Robinson and Tarik Black helped the Lakers, it's like, when you need that boost of energy off the bench, things just are kind of stagnant. I think he's an energy guy you bring in. He's a lob threat because he's really athletic. Has shown potential to defend multiple positions and is a really, really, like, talented rebounder. Like, I know we don't think about rebounding as a skill, but, man, I was very low on him as a prospect going into the season, but his rebounding is no joke.
No, so, yeah, he's been incredible in the G League in terms of, like, finding spaces to get in there. And, like, he just has, like, a real nose for the ball in terms of figuring out where it's going to come off and, like, getting after it. Like, pretty good instincts.
So, yeah, beyond that, I know Talen was running I think he honestly might have been playing the three, which makes sense given his just size. Insane wingspan yeah. and hand size. But unless JR is just awful and they don't think Kyle Kuzma can play the three, I do not see a scenario where he plays any time given his shooting. Because with Caruso, with no disrespect to the King, but with Caruso shooting and Talen shooting in that second unit, it's almost as bad as having Rondo back in the second unit. Just because,
honestly, it might arguably be. What, can he shoot at all? Like,
No.
Yeah. So, yeah. like, it might honestly be worse. Like, with all due respect to our thick King of the G League, but like. Yeah, like Talen, I think all of them are to some degree interesting prospects, but I just don't think any of them are like quite there yet.
No, absolutely not. Especially like Talen and Kostas, because I wrote their previously ons for silverscreenandroll.com. I did some digging on their shooting stats, and anything that isn't a layup or a dunk is just bad. I think they're both shooting under 25% on their jump shots, which is really bad.
Yeah, THT has like incredible highlights to watch, but it's just like, yeah. if you watch the games, there are still moments where he looks lost. There's like, he's 19, like yeah. that's like, or just turned 20 now. He just turned 19. Yeah. So, yeah. Cause he's one of the youngest players in the league. So yeah. like, yeah, I mean, like he's a young guy, like he might figure it out at some point, but I just don't think that it's fair to expect necessarily like a breakout in Orlando. I would love to be proven wrong though, because like I'm excited to watch him at least get some run during the seeding round games.
So our next question comes from at 2 weeks with pay. He asks, what's your ideal crunch time five closing lineup? And he says, as an aside, do you think Vogel kind of sticks with the hot hand philosophy in the playoffs, given that he mentioned streamlining their game planning strategies over the break? Great question. And to elaborate on that last part, Frank has said in watching film over the break, he has added and eliminated things from his game plan, which, given how much time they have before the season starts back up again, I don't know if adding is something they want to do, unless they're all just really comfortable in the system to where they can pick it back up as soon as they get back. But the eliminating things caught my attention, because I think Frank, when this all started, said something about when the season is in full swing, you really don't have time to watch games back. Like,
yeah,
you go over the key parts of the film when the matchups come back again. But as soon as the final whistle blows on one game, you're preparing for the next game. And for him to be able to watch games all the way through, see which units were playing well, just from an energy standpoint, not even looking at, analytics or, going based off of whatever they had showed prior to that. I think that is a really exciting aspect of the break they've been on. But as far as crunch time fives, I think there are a few ways you can go, and I'm interested to hear what you have to say, Harrison.
Yeah. So I think, I put some level of thought into this, and I think for me, it would be like less a specific five and more like, like a general principle. Of like, I think you want AD, and like we're talking like the premise is 5 minutes of a close game, something like that. Did they specify?
No. So the crunch time five, he just meant five players.
Oh, okay. So yeah. Okay. I just wasn't sure if there was a minutes restriction, but like, so if we're coming down, we're talking, let's say crunch time, we're talking 5 minutes, so something like that around here. I'd so it's a fair. Lineup that you wouldn't necessarily have to worry as much about like physical wear and tear, getting tired, whatever. Like you're just throwing out whoever you think is the best fitting five for what you need. For me, I think that as good as Dwight Howard and like JaVale McGee have been in their various roles this year, for me, I think that means putting Anthony Davis at the five. Although I think I could hear arguments the other way with given how Dwight's played at times, but I think for the Lakers to be at their best, I think it's Anthony Davis at the five, at least in these types of lineups. And then I think you put LeBron in at the four. And then I like Danny Green, although this was like a swing spot in my lineup where either if you want to play big, then you put Dwight in here and you have him play center and then shift LeBron and AD down. But if you want to play small, then you put in Green. And then I want Caruso, I think, is the two guard, because like he gives you some defense. We've seen how well that he fits with LeBron and AD. And then, or I guess, as one of the guards, because, you know, like, this is a little bit of a wonky lineup and that LeBron will probably be the ball handler no matter what. And then for that final guard spot, like Cook or JR, whoever is shooting better. Like, I just think that you want to get, like, you want to go small and get as much shooting around LeBron and AD as possible. And I think that Green gives you that. Caruso doesn't really give you that, but he's such a good ball mover and, like, helps out in other ways that I'd at least, as of right now, like to see him in that unit. And also for the defense that he gives you and switchability. And then, like, Cook or JR, whoever's shooting better.
Yeah, I think AD definitely needs to be closing at center. If for no other reason than the Lakers need a floor space, like a true floor spacer at the four when they're closing games. So my closing lineup would be Locks.
Maybe he can
sure.
guard five. Like, it's not like, like, he doesn't want to play five all the time, but, like, yeah. It's not even, you're not even playing undersized, really. Like, he can guard, like, big five. And what big fives are in closing lineups anyway? Like he'd be totally fine there. You're barely playing small. You're just getting the benefits of it.
Yeah. So I'd put AD at the five, LeBron at the three, Danny Green at the two. And then, honestly, whoever's shooting better between KCP and Caruso, you put at that one spot. And then the four spot is Jared Dudley and Kyle, or sorry, Markieff Morris and Kyle Kuzma to me. Like, and so I pulled up some lineup stats while you were talking, and the five man lineup of KCP, Danny Green, Anthony Davis, Kyle Kuzma, and LeBron James has posted a net rating of 23.3 in the 43 minutes they played together, which is encouraging. And the
still,
other one,
43 minutes is not a ton, but yeah, I mean, that's something.
This is all small sample size.
Yeah, it's worked in the spurts they've used it. So that is good and interesting to know.
And the other one is Caruso, Green, LeBron, Kuzma, and AD, and they posted a net rating of 28.5 in the 7 minutes they played together, which, you know, talk about small sample size, but when you're talking crunch time, you are talking like 7 minutes.
Maybe I need to respect Kuz a little bit more and like throw him in there. But I like the general principle for five that I think I threw out.
Yeah, like I said, it really is. It boils down to 3-point shooting, which is why I think you threw Cook and JR in there, because
or JR
again, yeah. It really is going to boil, especially on a LeBron James team. It really just boils down to who's making.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, like, are they really not going to run like a LeBron James, Anthony Davis pick and roll, like, for the most part down the stretch and attack out of that? Like, I feel we're kind of outsmarting ourselves, like, at some point if you're going away from that.
Our next question comes from Mr. Betches. I don't know. Who do you have as the final 7 to 8 man playoff rotation?
Ooh, all right.
I don't think it's that simple, just to preface it with that.
Yeah, okay. So LeBron, AD, KCP, Danny Green, Alex Caruso. So that's five.
Yeah.
I'm looking up and down the roster here. Almost just said Avery. I think Dwight Howard, for sure. JaVale McGee. And then, like, I think probably right now, Kuzma?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would replace one of JaVale or Dwight with Markieff, but otherwise I'm with you.
But, like, at that point, I think we're talking about a 9-man rotation. Like, I can't see either of those guys getting completely cut from, I don't think the Lakers are going to go to 8 men, at least not for most games. Like, they have enough guys here who do different things that, like, I can't see them going to 8. Like, I could see them going to 9, but probably not 8.
I think they need everyone on the roster.
Yeah, like, they're going to be – this is such a puzzle right now because of all, like, the pieces that they're missing and the minutes they have to fill. Like, I honestly, at least initially, I can't see them going less than 10.
Yeah, I don't either.
And I'm talking playoffs. Like, seeding round games, they're going to play everyone. But, like
– I think even in the postseason, they'll probably go more than 10.
Yeah, you might be right.
They have a lot of holes to fill. Which matchups demand AD to play the five? And for one possession, who is the better wing defender, JR Caruso? That comes from at Braun Tiger. I'm going to start with the last question first.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think Caruso's probably, like, far and away the better wing defender, even as a guard.
Yeah.
If we're talking about the JR Smith from 2 years ago, which is asking a lot. I think even then Caruso's probably a better defender. But, you know, who knows? We'll see. If JR can even play a lick of defense, I think he enters the conversation as like getting big minutes at the three.
Yes. I think that's like, you know, I think that is definitely something that could happen. It's just been so long since we've seen him. Like, I don't know where his best position is now and like how much he can defend and all this stuff. Like at some point, like we're just, you know, it's all theoretical with him because he's been gone for so long. To the other question, I don't know if you disagree with me, but looking at the standings of the teams that will make the playoffs, like I think in terms of, like, Anthony Davis needs to play the five at various points during the game. I think for me, and I don't know if you did, let me know if you disagree. I think for me right now, that's the Clippers, that is the Rockets, and that is probably the Mavericks. Although, like, I mean, the Lakers playing the Mavericks at any point is pretty unlikely. But like, I think those are the three teams where he would have to, I think, at various points. Like, these other teams, like, could it give you an advantage at times? Yes. But like, would you have to? No, because some of their best players are big. And so like, you could probably get away with having Dwight there in closing lineups. In some of these cases, you may even have an advantage going big against these teams. But like, I think the Clippers and the Rockets especially present so many matchup problems with their various small ball lineups that like the Lakers probably would have to play down a little bit and play some small ball to match up with those teams at times.
I think the answer to that question is any team that has a center that can make three-pointers at a decent clip. So I'd throw the Bucks in there, although...
Oh, yeah, I was just thinking West, but yes, you're right.
I think with Brooke, obviously, that's a big problem. And I fully expect the Lakers to go full AD in that scenario. But luckily, what was that?
I was just going to say, I think the Lakers will have Dwight defend Brook some. Like, Dwight can move decent. Like, Dwight can keep up with Brook Lopez on the perimeter. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
this iteration of Dwight, sure. Yeah. And the Raptors, too. The Raptors have some guys that can shoot. Serge, most notably.
But, because I was listening to Zach Lowe's been doing his great like what happened like where were we podcast series, and I was listening to his one on the Bucks, and I guess like down the stretch of the season the Bucks were having Brook Lopez go and post up smaller guys that were defending him, and like not that Anthony Davis could not defend a Brook Lopez post up, he is obviously capable of that. I just don't know if that's like the best usage of his efforts throughout an entire series and like the wear and tear that would take, like that type stuff.
Would you put AD on Joel Embiid or would you prefer Dwight Howard or JaVale McGee taking that matchup?
I think I would, I mean, out of the guys that I would prefer, especially if I'm Vogel and like I know that AD does not want to play five more than he has to, like I would definitely put Dwight on him, like the majority. And I think the Lakers, I believe they had some success with that when they played against the Sixers the first time, right? Because I believe they won the first time. And
yeah,
then,
the second time was all
yeah,
bad.
I mean, the second time was, that was not a good game. And you know, like, hey, like games like that happen over the course of the regular season. You know, I think, like, AD could defend Embiid, but I believe Embiid has given AD problems going back to New Orleans, or is that the other way around? I'm, like, I know there was a narrative about the two of them.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. I just know Embiid is a very strong and talented basketball player.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't see the Sixers getting to the finals, but, like, that is another one where, like, you might want a bigger body to throw, because you definitely don't want AD defending Embiid for the majority of the game by any means.
Yeah. Our next question comes from @Cinco_de_Mayo. Why is it always Team X can upset the Lakers in the first round? No other contenders get this treatment. No one mentions the Bucks or Clippers having tough first round matchups or really anybody else. The Bucks, I think, are a special case because
the East sucks.
Yeah. So I think that's why.
The Bucks are going to be playing because I think we're all assuming that the Magic will probably move up because they're basically tied with the Nets. The Bucks are going to be playing either the Nets or Wizards, like, in their first round matchup. And that series might not go four games. Yeah. Like, just that, like, those teams genuinely may have to forfeit at the rate of attrition that they're, like, having in terms of guys, like, signing with them and leaving, got, like, all this stuff. Like, you know, like, so that's why nobody's talking about the Bucks.
You don't believe in Jamal Crawford's ability to get past Giannis. He scored 50 points in his last game.
Nothing would be funnier than Jamal Crawford like genuinely stealing a game from the Bucks. Like, what if it was game one and people were like, "Oh, are the Bucks ready for the playoffs? Are they ready for the Brett?" Like, I want this so bad now.
At that point, Rob goes directly to Giannis's room and go, "Hey, buddy, I know it was a rough night. Don't worry.
I just one want more you to year. Know we'll never let that happen to you. Yeah. We'll sign Jamal so that he doesn't get to do that to you ever again." So that's why you're not hearing about it. I think with the Clippers, it's like, I mean, to be honest, like, it's because nobody cares about the Clippers. There's a reason, like, take you all into how the sausage is made. Like, this is not how we determine what we are going to cover as a Lakers-centric site. But for national debate shows and, like, these people who are debating, like, could you upset the Lakers in the first round? Like, that's because they know that people want to hear Lakers talk. They don't really want to hear Clippers talk. And so, like, that's the reason for that. And it's also because nobody paid attention to the Mavs this year, evidently. So, like, the Mavs are good. And, like, I don't think that they'll upset the Clippers, but they're definitely more threatening than any of the Lakers' prospective first-round playoff opponents, I feel like. I guess other than maybe, like, a firing on all cylinders New Orleans team, you could make the argument. But Dallas is really good. And, like, you know, but the reason you don't hear that talked about is because people don't care about the Clippers. Like, that's not something that people are tuning in to First Take to hear thoughts on, unless they're having, like, chemistry problems or something.
Our next question I'm going to save for later out of respect for you. And maybe we just won't get to it out of respect for your feelings. But so we're going to skip to the next question from @Prince on LBC. How many Lakers do you anticipate being in all caps bucket during this playoff run?
All right. Well, so you already all got to hear how I pronounced that earlier in this episode. So I'm not going to scream it again because I realized I did that right into your ears and I apologize.
Oh, no. I have you turned all the way down. Like, what I'm doing is reading your lips.
No, not you. Not you. I meant listeners. Yeah, I don't care about you. I meant our listeners. But, so we're asking which Laker, like, did people forget as a bucket? I should honestly do this in the lead up to the season, just every day until their first game. I should tweet that a different player on the team used to be a bucket. But I also don't feel like setting my mentions on fire that badly with Lakers fans who are not in on the bit and are like, what do you mean LeBron was a bucket? Like, LeBron is a bucket. He's still really good. Like, you know, because people did not really get the irony in the people forget Cavs LeBron was a bucket. So I'm not confident that they're going to, like, everyone's going to grasp that for the Lakers one. So I probably won't do that. But
Twitter,
like,
not grasping something?
Yeah, not grasping nuance. No, I mean, you know, like, I've had my whole, like, mentions the last 24 hours has been LeBron versus Curry stands, anti-vaxxers, and QAnon believers. So, you know, not enjoying Twitter right now. And just, like, I'm just wondering why we even made this website, to be honest. But I think in terms of players on the Lakers that are a bucket, like, I mean, the answer's all of them. Like, if we're just looking, you know, like, depending on the context, like, if we're talking, you know, and we're using the extremely low bar that I have set on my Twitter account of someone being able to score at least literally one basket, like, all of these guys are a bucket, you know? Like, I might, like, just to mess with everyone, like, tweet, people forget Kostas Adetokounmpo was a bucket tomorrow. Like, and just, like, see if I can find a couple clips of, like, him, like, hitting a shot that is not a dunk and, like, throw that out there and just, like, watch the reaction pour in. But, yeah, I mean, all the Lakers, like, if any of the Lakers went, and nothing pisses off the people who don't get the bit more than when you respond, like, if they went, yeah, but could you beat them one-on-one? Like, because I will ironically reply with that sometimes when they're like, what do you mean? Like, that guy's not a bucket. He's, like, he only averages 12 points. I'm like, yeah, but could you stop him one-on-one? That's my favorite response, like, out of all of them. Shortly ahead of when they ask who, and I say, just the kids. The kids forget.
If I had played in my community league just a little bit longer, I would have been able to ask or answer the question, but could you take Lonzo one-on-one? The answer would have been a resounding no, but I would have at least been able to answer it.
Yeah. Yes,
with confidence. There's actually video of LeVar Ball playing in that same gym that I played at.
Is that the highlight mix of him? Like, yes, where he's like, that's your home gym?
It's our tier one community gym, yes.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't know that. That's like a fun behind the scenes. Mia and I were watching that highlight video and dying because my fiance has just discovered basketball through me and like over the last year has progressively gotten more into it since I guess since she realized she was going to be with me and this was my job and she might as well like show an interest in it. But like I've been introducing her to the aspects that I think will interest her most. And so I obviously started with LeVar Ball. Who she finds very entertaining and will imitate now. It's only barely offensive. And like, you know, yeah. So like we were watching his highlight mix the other day and also his, like all of his first take appearances, which are still hysterical.
Yeah. His Whitlock comment still kills me every time it comes on my timeline.
Oh yeah, but like, what is he like? I don't want him to talk to me about anything but snacks.
Yeah, kills.
He said snacks like I say bucket.
Yeah, it really was. He said the only thing Whitlock should be giving his opinion on is snacks. timing.
No, I love LeVar, and like I think that I think he is someone with a good heart who is like mostly in on the joke a lot of the time, and yeah. like plays it up a little bit, and like I find him very entertaining, especially now that I don't have to write about him. And
absolutely,
when I tell you that he is like just a younger carbon copy of his father, like I'm being serious. Like I think I've told this story on the podcast before, but his dad sat next to me at a couple Laker games when Lonzo was still here, and it was just like an older LeVar. And you know, it was you know, that family cracks me up.
I think I've told this story before too, but the first time I went to go see Lonzo play, I thought Lonzo's grandpa was his dad because he was sitting sidelines and being like really loud. And then there was somebody else being really loud. I was like, oh, man, I feel so bad for Lonzo. I was with my friend Craig. And I was like, I feel so bad for Lonzo. Like, he has, like, a loud dad and, like, an obnoxious older brother who probably just, like, is living off of his brother's basketball success. And my friend Craig goes, oh, that guy? No, that's his dad. And I'm just like, oh, no. But, I mean, I guess that's a compliment to LeVar. He looks really good for his age, especially now. He dropped a ton of weight as soon as he found out he was going to be in the national spotlight.
Yeah, no, he's a good-looking dude.
Good for him. We've arrived to our last question, Harrison, and it comes from your fiance, and she wants to know why Matisse Thybulle is the cutest player ever. I want to preface this with, I agree, he's pretty good looking. Cutest player ever is a stretch.
I'm not getting roped into like rating the most good looking basketball players with you again. Like I know that you want to have this discussion again.
Yes.
But okay.
But if we're talking just like cutest, sure, but most attractive, Serge Ibaka and Rick Fox would like a word, sir.
Or ma'am, I think, because you're my fiance, yes, in this case. But, yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't really have an answer to that. I don't understand why my experience on Twitter gets worse every day. I, you know, honestly, like, it was one thing when she was, like, jokingly, like, thirsting after Alex Caruso. Like, I could get with it because, you know, like, part of my brand has been playing up Alex Caruso and his stuff until like everybody was doing that. And then I had to kind of move away from it because
look at the monster you created.
Yeah, exactly. and so like, but now it's like, she's changing her wallpaper to like a Sixers player and constantly trying to get me to watch his YouTube videos and telling me how cute he is all the time.
They're good.
Like, you know, we're supposed to be getting married soon. And like, you know, I'm secure in myself, but like, I can't compete with that at the same time. So I don't know. I have people tweeting at me that I'm lucky that like people can't go to the bubble yet. It's just like, it's cyberbullying, you know, like, and like, I don't have to put up with this and it's uncalled for. And honestly, I would like an apology from her for like, you know, she could have talked to me about this in private, but instead she had to make the whole internet laugh at me again. This is like worse than when like my, like, you know, I accidentally tweeted that my mom thought that Pete's voice was hot.
You cannot compete with real life Miles Morales. which is what Matisse Thybulle reminds me of. And
no, he hey, he's a good looking guy. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and break down why he's the cutest player in the NBA or something, but like, you know, like he's certainly better looking than me. Like that's a very low bar, but like
he has, okay, hold on. What we're not going to be doing is being self-deprecating on this podcast. Okay. Not on our show, sir.
All right, well, now I just need everybody to tweet compliments at me just to, like, you know, help me feel better. So if you listen around this long, like, that's what we're asking you to do next. You saved us with the mailbag, and now I just need you to, like, either tweet at me why I'm good-looking or, like, tweet at Mia that, you know, tweet flaws about Thybulle at my fiancé, please. Just, like, bully her into stopping to doing this.
Use the hashtag HarrisonIsHot, capital I.
We are not asking people to do that. That feels like a recipe for us to both get fired. But you asked for it, so you know I'm definitely throwing you under the bus.
Just pictures of giraffes of like their favorite.
This is going to backfire so bad, I just realized. Awesome.
Well, that's our show, unless you have any...
No, I'm done, Christian. I got nothing else. This is it for me today.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And encourage you all to continue to be active on social media, particularly as it pertains to that last part of the podcast. And I will be on vacation for the next week. So Harrison, enjoy yourself. Enjoy this time away from me, especially after this podcast. I'm sure you will.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely ready for a break from you. So thanks, Kristen.
Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.